Good morning, everyone. I'm very pleased indeed to welcome Dr. Jasleen Kandari. She's an expert in Indian art, really, and she works in London at the
Morby College,
where they run various programs that some of you might like to attend. Would you like to tell us the details
certainly.
Of some of this?
They're going to be evening courses, so people can actually attend who are working or in a different city in that way. In September, in the fall, it'll be on engaging Indian art. That's an introduction to all forms of Indian art from antiquity to contemporary times. In January, it will be on Indian paintings from historical to modern. And in the spring, it'll be Indian textiles. And at the Ashmolean, I'm doing a study day in May on exploring Indian textiles for the whole day. That's lectures, gallery talks, and handling sessions of the Ashmoleans, which gives a wide variety of view, and a summer school at the Ashmolean on exploring Asian textiles as well.
Excellent.
So quite a few things coming up.
And Dr. Kandari has been a fellow at the Ashmolean Museum for a year.
It's been a year now.
So I'm very pleased indeed to welcome her, and today she's going to speak to us on sculptured forms of enlightenment.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, welcome everybody. So as I'm an art historian, today I'm going to talk about Hindu art. So basically the iconography, form, style and function of the depiction of gods and goddesses in Hindu sculpture. So because it's only about an hour lecture, I'll just show the main deity so at least you can distinguish them. I understand that you're all going to see the Indian gallery.
That's right.
Is it with Andrew Topsfield?
No.
So not the head of the Indian art department? Okay, with someone then.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, that's okay. Yeah. Well, when you go, so basically, hopefully this lecture will help you understand because I lecture at the Ashmolean, most of the examples I'm going to use today are from the Ashmolean. And ordinarily, I would have recommended that you go to the galleries and see what I've shown you in the form. So now you will be going there anyway.
Yes.
So that will help you understand and appreciate the art forms even more as well. Now, also, as I like to talk about contemporary art into my historical lectures, I'll explain a bit about how a couple of artists are also using Hindu gods and goddesses in their work. For instance, I thought this is very interesting. Did you notice this Facebook page for Saraswati?
Oh.
So, goddess of learning. So there's her name, Devi Saraswati. There's her profile picture. That's her. Look, you've got the Buddha in there as well. And look at all her friends. You've got Kali, all the other gods and goddesses. And these are the people she's chatting to over there as well. And, of course, there's the shrine itself. So this is a very contemporary image. And what I was trying to see is, what is this? Now, they're actually separate panels. So these are all separate panels which have been pasted onto this wall over here. So, yes, that's something very unusual to see on the streets of India. Right. How do I move it down? Do I move it from...
Oh, arrow key, yes.
Down there? Okay. Is that right? That way?
No, that way? Right.
Oh, right.
Where is that?
I've got... Oh, that's it. Oh, hang on. See, this, I think, was on the street somewhere in Calcutta.
Okay.
And funny enough, one of my friends who was doing research over there posted it up. And that's how I saw it, because it's not published in any books at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Hinduism, as you all know, is quite a complex religious system because it consists of several different cults based around various gods, mainly Shiva, Vishnu, and the goddess Devi or Shakti. So as we shall see, Hindu art is primarily devotional in nature, with the concept of the divine being represented in a human or a superhuman and symbolic manner in the form of gods and goddesses. Now, monumental rock-cut sculpt temples, like this one at Ellora in Aurangabad, are filled with reliefs of Hindu and Buddhist sculptures. Hindu sculptures were produced for two reasons: as an image of the god for veneration within a temple or on a domestic altar, or as a carving to cover the exterior walls of temples or portable shrines, illustrating the legends of the deities to the devotees. So that is to say, Hindu sculpture was produced for reasons greater than mere decorative purposes. Although, at the same time, they are very aesthetically stunning anyway. And this over here is the Chaitya Hall in one of the caves at Ajanta, also in Aurangabad. And here you can see also Hindu carvings in the cave site as well. And very stunning cave complex as well. If you're ever in the area, I do recommend at least once in your lifetime, go and visit the cave temples at Ajanta and Ellora. Now, there are a variety of sacred images, both male and female, with their attributes and diverse roles in different contexts, which provide a very broad range of sculptural representations whose proportions, attributes, and poses were dictated in the sacred texts. So these are the Shilpa Shastras on the art manuals, really, which are found in the two texts, the Chitra Lakshana and the Chitra Sutra section of the Vishnu Dharmotara Purana. Now, Shiva is one of the most greatest and, of course, very paradoxical Hindu deities because he represents very contrasting aspects. Yet, so on one side, he's an ascetic, yet he's also the husband of Parvati. He's also a dancer, a musician, and the creator and destroyer of all things. Shiva is illustrated in several ways. Here are representations of Lord Shiva in the symbolic or iconic form in what is known as the Linga. Here we can see this is a 16th century Linga, and behind it is a painting of Shiva. This is in a Tanjore temple in southern India, and it consists of a vertical stone shaft of a more phallic shape with a rounded top, which emerges from a circular base. The Linga represents Shiva as the male principle and the energy which underlies creation, and the base represents the female organ. So that's the top male part at the top, and this is the organ, female part, the yoni, and the female principle, or the power or shakti in creation, so that together they emanate the energy of creation representing the union of Shiva and his consort Shakti. So this is actually an image of union between Shiva and Shakti. So these forms of images were enshrined in the sanctuary of Hindu temples and worshipped. Usually you'll see, probably on the other side, there's a spout at the side of the yoni, which serves as a drain through which the water and the offerings which were poured onto the linga during the act of worship would have drained off. And at the bottom you've got more of an uncarved rough base. This would have been buried normally below the level of the shrine floor. Sometimes also we see depictions of cobra coiling around the image, as that's normally symbolises a protective guardian. Now, Shiva is also represented in the human or iconic form. This here is the famous 17th century depiction of Shiva Nataraja. This is in the Ashmolean's gallery on display. And also, we've just picked up the one on the side in the Oxford Centre of Hindu Studies, and then we've put it over there for those of you who want to see a sculpted representation. So, interestingly, just compare and contrast those while I'm just talking through them, both of these images. Now, this is all about creation and destruction. Here he is dancing the dance of destruction of ignorance. This is the Ananda Tandavam, and he's acting out the end of one worldly cycle whilst welcoming in the next life cycle. This is a very powerful piece. It's very well structured, very well balanced. And what you can see over here, at the top you can see the cobra uncoiling. Well, it's from the lower right arm, so that's over there. And there's a crescent moon and a skull are on his crest. Now, he dances within this whole arch of flames. The upper right hand holds a small drum that's shaped like an hourglass, that's called a damaru in Sanskrit. Specific hand gesture, or the mudra that he uses, is called the damaru hastu. So that's the one over there. Now, this is used to hold the drum symbolizing the sound originating creation, or the beat of the drum in the passage of time. Now, the upper left hand contains Agni, or fire. Now, this signifies destruction and the opposing concepts. And now, so what you have in the upper hands over there, you've got the counterpoise of creation and destruction, or the fire of life. Now, the second right hand, this one over here, this is showing the Abhaya Mudra. Now, this means fearlessness, bestowing protection from both evil and ignorance to those who follow the righteousness of the Dharma. The second left hand points down towards the raised foot. That signifies upliftment and liberation. It also points to the left foot with the sign of the elephant down over there. And this leads way through the jungle of ignorance. The dwarf right at the bottom, which Shiva dances upon, this is him trampling on the demon, Apasmara. Now, this symbolizes Shiva's victory over ignorance. It also represents the passage of spirit from the divine into material. So there's a lot of iconographic elements to look into one sculpture if you know exactly what to look for. Now, as the Lord of Dance, Nataraja, Shiva performs the Tandava, this dance in which the universe is created, maintained, and dissolved. Shiva's long matted tresses, usually piled up in knot, but they loosen down in this wild dance and crash into the heavenly bodies, knocking them off course or destroying them utterly, whilst all these surrounding flames represent the manifest universe. The snake swirling round his waist over there is the Kundalini. So this is the Shakti, or the divine force, thought to reside within everything. And if you look at his facial expression, he's got a rather stoic face. It was a sort of neutral expression. And thus, everything is in balance. That's just an image of Shiva. This is in the set into context. This is in a Meenakshi temple in Madurai. So there, he's actually dressed over there. You can see some full of the garlands over there as well. So that's to set it into the context. Oh, it's got to press it that way. Now, you will generally see in Hindu sculpture many figures with multiple arms and even multiple heads. Now, these arms, which hold different attributes in each hand, and the multiple heads, have different expressions usually. Now, these represent many qualities, the different qualities that Hindu gods and goddesses possess. So it's used to emphasize the cosmic nature and function and the omnipotence of deities. So if you note, when we just look quickly back at the Nataraja one, the way that the skill of the craftsman, ensures that these multiple arms actually are very well integrated into the body, so that, can you see, they actually seem rather organic rather than artificial. It actually looks as though it was his natural form. So that's very important in terms of the skill they create. This here is an 18th century Gangra style of painting. Just thought I'll just put in a painting, pictorial representation. Again, it's from the Punjab Hills. It's from the Asian collections, civilizations collections in Singapore. It illustrates Shiva over here. Here he is, again, Shiva Nataraja form. He is dancing very gracefully for Parvati, his wife, over there, surrounded by all these celestial beings and some of his sons. Now, again, in this image, the reason why I'm showing it is, again, he's holding that drum, the Damaru. And this is, again, to create the primeval sound to bring about new creation. So this here is an example of a pictorial representation of the mythic vision of creation. Now, it's worth noting that although inside the sanctuary of a Shiva temple, the icon, which is worshipped, is usually in the form of the linga, the human forms of sculptures would have adorned the temple's outer walls for decorative as well as veneration purposes. So this is, for example, this is an 11th century sandstone sculpture of Shiva and Parvati. It's from Madhya Pradesh in central India. And this is on display at the Ashmolean. This originally would have been used to decorate the outer walls of the temple. Now, in terms of style, I thought I'd show you this piece because this is another image of Shiva and his consort Parvati whilst holding his trident. And this is on display at Ishmoling. Actually, when you go there next week, you'll see quite a range of these sorts of folk bronzes. From Eastern India and from Central India. And what I wanted to show you here is look how different the style is in the folk style of sculpture. This is produced in the 13th century in Rajasthan. And in many regions of India, folk style of bronzes casting flourished in the more village and tribal level, alongside what we've been looking at, which is mainly the classical mainstream styles patronized by the courts and temples. Yet you can see they still are very fine expressive pieces in themselves, but if you notice, they have a more robust and simplified form than what we saw in the classical Hindu sculptures. So Vishnu is another important male deity of the Hindu trinity of Brahma, Shiva and Vishnu. He is also the preserver and protector of creation. This is an 11th century stone figure on display at Ishmolian as well. It's from West Bengal during the Pala period. Now this actually was presented to the Ishmolian in the 17th century by the governor of the East India Company. And what is particularly important about this piece is that apparently this is the first major Indian sculpture to have entered any Western museum collection. What you take a look at that when you go in there more closely. But what you can see over here is that Vishnu holds his principal attributes. We've got the mace up over here. We've got the chakra over there, the throwing disc. The conch shell, that should be down there. So that's not particularly clearly. These are all to do with... to do in the battle. These are all things that are used in the battle. A trumpet heralds the start of the battle, the end of it. And in all the hands, basically, this is to illustrate his martial status as a divine warrior ruler, whilst he is also making this Abhaya Mudra hand gesture of reassurance and protection. What you'll see always in Vishnu representations is he is always represented as standing upright in this Samabhanga pose. He always is crowned and bejeweled in a more kingly fashion than you'll see with representations of Shiva. So he's like a mortal hero elevated to a deity status. Now the evolution of sculpture in India reached its peak in the 10th to 11th century, what with very sublime bronzes being produced in southern India during the Chola dynasty. This here is a very fine Chola bronze of Vishnu. This is in the Victoria and Albert Museum, produced in Tamil Nadu. And note how elegant and refined this piece is. Generally, in Hindu sculpture, we do tend to see a more sensitive contours producing more soft and rounded forms. So there is an absence of bone and muscle, which you tend to see more of an exaggeration of an idealized human form, in contrast to what we see in Western sculpture, which is a more anatomical idealized sculptural tradition. So where you can see, forms of the musculature. Should we just... or just resume the slideshow? Oh, what happened there? Okay, oops. Is it finishing updating?
Oh, no.
Do you want to wait 13 minutes, 52 seconds? I've got you. Can you postpone that? Or remind in an hour?
Yeah, I'm trying to postpone.
Or in 13 minutes it'll come up again, will it?
Yeah. Very sorry about this.
It's like an advert break.
Really?
Can you move that? Maybe Oh, but let me just go back now. Okay. I just want to mention in terms of technique, it's worthwhile knowing that the bronzes were made using the lost wax technique, whereby the figure is first modelled in wax It's covered in a thick coating of several layers of clay, and then it's heated to form the mould, which, and then at the same time, the wax then runs out. This is then replaced by molten metal with copper, this alloy, which forms the bronze material. Now, Vishnu had many incarnations, which he manifests at different times. There are 10 forms or incarnations. So this here is Dash Avatars. They're based on the biological evolution of living beings. So you start from the aquatic and terrestrial animals, like the fish, tortoise and boar. And then you progress gradually through the incarnations towards the more human animal forms and finally the human forms. This is an 18th century painting. This is actually, again, from Andhra Pradesh in the Victoria and Albert Museum. It indicates the 10 incarnations of Vishnu. So what we can see, you can see him first as a fish form, then he goes to tortoise, then he goes to boar, then he goes to man-lion, then you're going to the more animal-human form, then Vamana, going to Parushurama, then, then you go to the human forms, to Rama, Balarama, Krishna, and Kalki. And this is actually from a school of company painting. And company painting is a name given to paintings made by Indian artists for the British during the Raj in India. Now, the third deity I want to show you is the goddess Durga, who is the embodiment of Shakti and cosmic power. Many forms of the goddess or Devi are worshipped. A range of forms of Devi is associated with Shiva, so that Parvati is the sweet or loving consort, Kali is the dynamic aspect of Shiva's Shakti, and Durga is the warrior queen goddess. So ultimately, the supreme goddess, Mahadevi, was seen to embody the energies of Shiva, Vishnu and Brahma, where she was known as Bhagavati. Now, in the myth of the male divinities, it was said that as they were unable to defeat the demon Mahisha in the battle, the goddess Durga was requested to intervene on their behalf. So they created her actually from their own body parts, and they armed her with their own supernatural weapons. So what we see here are representations of a multi-armed Durga, all ablazing, riding a lion and slaying. Here we go. Here she is, slaying the buffalo demon. And the demon, of course, has assumed the disguise of the buffalo. So once she actually beheaded the buffalo, the demon Mahisa actually revealed himself, whereupon she destroyed him with Shiva's trident. And so this is actually an example of a narrative sculpture because it actually tells a story. So what we have over here again, this is both from the Ashmolean collection. This is an 18th and 19th century folk bronze from Madhya Pradesh. And look at it, contrasting it in style with a 9th to 10th century bronze from the Deccan Plateau. So you can see, once you get to understand what the styles are, you can actually get to recognise from which part of India they actually have been produced. Now, one thing that's unique in Indian art, and indeed in sculpture, is the conveyance of emotional mood projected by the sculpture called rasa. Art and mythology are linked by rasa, and this concept has existed since the writings of the Natyashastra in 5th century BC. So that's this Indian codification of dance, music, dramatic arts, and aesthetics, in which artists are instructed to use gesture, expression, passion and colour to evoke a rasa, of which there are 9. So what we have here in slaying the demon a buffalo by Durga, it's fury, or Rudra is the dominant rasa. And in Shiva Nataraja over here, it's wonder, or abhuta, is the main emotion. This is actually from the Chola bronze from the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. And this one is an 8th century stone piece from the Philadelphia Museum of Art from Orissa. So it does actually require a lot of skill to convey the dominant emotion of the myth that is being illustrated, whilst the other ones are love, humour, compassion, heroism, terror, disgust and peace. Now, in terms of reading the sculptures, besides rasa, specific postures are used, needs to be noted. So that is whether deities are standing, seated, or whether they are standing on a vehicle animal. As well as mudras, we've just talked about, these are the hand gestures. These communicate the deity's message. So that, for instance, Abhaya Mudra with the upturned palm generally means protection to the devotee, whereas Avara Mudra, that's with the hand turned down, means granting blessings. And as we see, the deities also hold a range of symbolic identifiers, and those reveal the god's identities. Now, Ganesha is a very popular human, a popular Hindu god, and he is the son of Parvati. Here we have a 19th century, quite vibrant example of painted soapstone from Jaipur in the Ashmolean's collections. Now, he has a very unusual anatomy because he has an elephant head on a childlike human body. Now, there are various interesting birth myths about Ganesha. My favourite one states that he was created by Parvati on her own with the dirt scraped from her body whilst she was showering. So she basically was empowering this figure that she had created and brought it to life as her son. Now, Shiva was away from home at that time, and when he returned, he came and saw Ganesha guarding this bathroom door to Parvati. And, of course, in that moment, he didn't know that this was his new son. So, basically, he challenged Ganesha and beheaded him. So then, when Parvati came out, she was very distraught to see that her son's son had been slain. And when she explained it to him, he then said, as compensation for the loss of this human head, he would put the next figure that came about, he would create that head form on the new son. And, of course, what he saw was the elephant. And so Ganesha was given the title on the role of the Lord of the Gunas, Shiva's dwarfish retinue. Now, indeed, figures of Ganesha tend to be placed above doorways, as he was also granted custody of all doorways in recognition of in the courage in guarding his mother's doorway. And, of course, also in the Oxford Centre of Hindu Studies in your office, there is a figure of Ganesha above the doorway as well, which is the first thing I went to see. Have you got a Ganesha on top of the doorway? Now, as the guardian of entrances, Ganesha is also known as Lord of Blessings, and his blessings are sought before any new undertaking is begun, like at weddings or in the new year or religious ceremonies. And so he's used within a temple context. It is Ganesha and his wisdom who is the first deity to be honoured. Now, indeed, if he is not honoured, because he can control the positive or negative outcomes of beginnings, he then becomes Lord of Obstacles, or Vigneshvara, and that's because he places obstacles in your path. Now, here again in the Ashmolean collections is a 9th century bronze from the Deccan Plateau. Now, in this figure, he's depicted as dancing, just as his father Shiva, except because he is a bit portly, as you can see, he can only muster a sort of comical jig when you compare this elegant and graceful dance of Shiva Nataraja. So Ganesha is depicted with a bit of a pot belly over there, around which he's a snake draped. He's got very chubby, childlike arms and legs, and he never really becomes a fully grown adult in his depictions. He tends to carry one of his own tusks, and that's according to legend. He detached it from his own mouth in order to use it as a pen when he was asked to perform as a scribe for the sage Vyasa while he recited the epic story of the Mahabharata. And also, he generally, I think this hand, oh no, it's over there, would have held some bowl of sweetmeats or laddus, which he picks up with his trunk, and that's probably why he's portly. Eats too many laddus. So he also carries a rosary and an axe, but in other depictions of Ganesha, he is seen to be carrying an elephant goad and a noose. And when he's shown with four hands in sculptures, he also performs the Abhaya Mudra, or the gesture of fearlessness. Now, in my art historical lectures, I usually include an aspect of contemporary art related to its traditional historical genres, And I think it's very interesting to see how contemporary artists comment on our world and the wider society, as well as the individual artists and how artists assimilate the past with the present. So this here is the work of Ravinder Reddy. He brings a sense of pop art into religious and to religious Hindu sculpture with a sort of dual sensibility. So this means that his work combines a liking for this extraordinary